blank worksheet that we're going to do for next time. So it's so I don't have it for you today because I'm still... I've written it. I just have to figure out the logistics of putting it together. I think it's going to work. I think the best way to go, but my advice to you in doing it is to actually print it out and kind of work with each other, filling in the blanks, and then go online and fill in what the answers are. I assume that that's a capability, printing it out. I made some changes to the syllabus. I'll post the update today. Just not big changes, just reflecting actually kind of what we read. And a couple people seem to have missed the change I made to the last syllabus, where we are not doing the there's a section in the book right at the end of the future interest where there's kind of talk about these very specific rules of indestructibility, continuity, remainder, Shelley's rule, the rule against perpetuities. I am not going to cover those in class, and I had announced a couple times that that's why those were in italics. I was kind of waiting to see if we have time. I don't think they're a great use of our time because they are... They so infrequently come up in the real world. They do come up on the bar exam. You will study them in your bar review course. If anybody really wants to get a jump on that 3 years early and come sit in my office and talk about Shelley's rule, I'm happy to do so. But I'm not going to test you on those. We'll talk a little bit about them today, and you'll see kind of the idea behind them is that sometimes these future interests have so many kind of contingencies built into them, or have so many steps into the future that they seem to last forever and ever. At some point, we kind of don't like it. The rule against perpetuities is really just this idea that we don't want one person today to decide forever and ever for generations. Have total, it's like your great grandma has total control of the family. She's like telling everyone from the grave what they can and cannot do. At some point, we let people do that a little bit, but at some point we say it's ridiculous. That's kind of what those rules are. It's how to calculate those timelines of how long we're going to let somebody do that. A little while, but not forever, is really the answer. And the math of how you calculate that gives people a headache, and I'm not going to do that to you. So you are going to have those worksheet that's going to look very similar to this type of thing. If you guys already picked, I know a couple people picked it up last time, otherwise I'll pass it out today. This is the type of kind of problem you're going to have, and then I'll ask you a question about it, like, what does Courtney have type of thing? And then it'll be answers to choose from. I realized I made it do the Monday after spring break, which is like not awesome of me. But I'm going to change it to the Wednesday after spring break, right?
Yes.
Okay, I do not think this is hard. I don't think this is a hard assignment, especially because it's multiple choice and you're going to have people that you can work with. But also this way, I have to go to a conference in D.C. tomorrow, so I can't have my office hours tomorrow as well, which I know everybody was burning to come to office hours Thursday afternoon before spring break, but particularly because if people wanted to ask questions about future interests, I wouldn't be there. I'll extend it to next Wednesday. That'll be reflected in the new syllabus that I'll put up on the website today. Any questions about that? Questions about this assignment are quite different than questions about the last assignment. So, like the last assignment, people were like, "What exactly are you looking for here? And do you think that these ones?" I will not entertain any questions that are about a specific kind of question on there. But if you want to come and talk to me and say, like, "Can we just go over contingent remainders again?" I'm happy to do that type of thing. I'm also happy to answer kind of questions on Facebook or via email or something like that. Understanding that. Not always sitting there on Facebook, and my answers are not always going to immediately pop up. Sometimes I am, but not usually after 6. Okay, so let's see. Any questions, logistics, things like that? Lovely. All right, so what we're going to do today is we're going to hopefully finish up all of our estates and lands and future interests, take a break and work on some more sample problems, and then start concurrent land. Hopefully you guys felt like a kind of a little bit of a sigh of relief when you started doing the concurrent ownership reading, which is like, oh, something that makes sense again, right? It's a very kind of straightforward section. I think that this section, the estates and land, is one of the most confusing, just a
depends on who you are. This is often one of the most confusing sections for people in the semester, and then it kind of gets onto things that we can relate to again. Let's do a quick review of just what of all the estates we've talked about so far. Right, so we've talked about the fee simple absolute, right, which we know is kind of our basic way of land ownership. I had a couple questions after class last time about just these words here. I encourage you to forget any other kind of thoughts you have about what these words might be. I mean, I guess absolute is helpful, but fee is not kind of anything related to any payment. It's nothing like any type of fee we use in other circumstances where we use that word. Fee simple absolute, just referring to the major way that we hold land, where you have control over the land both today and in the future, settled in one landowner. Life estate, right, where you only are holding the property for the length of your life. And fee tail, being this archaic kind of, although still lingering around in some of our states, method of passing down land to the next generation so it stays within your bloodline. Then we started talking about the defeasible fees. And the defeasible fees are where we get a little bit more complicated, right? And the defeasible, that idea means it's something that you could have cut short. Now, this defeasible fee part, you could also have, and we'll see some examples of it, we could also put that word in front of life estate or fee tail. You could have a defeasible life estate or a defeasible fee tail. They are just ways of cutting short that estate. And we'll see some examples, but I want you to think of that defeasible just like, what's a way that somebody actually could, we have kind of what we think of as their ownership, but we're going to reduce that ownership. We might cut it short in some way. And in an uncertain way, right? It's not like a term estate or a life estate where we know where it ends. It has this kind of uncertainty. We're not sure exactly when and if it's going to end. And we saw the three examples of this, and I realized as I'm going around answering questions that we forgot to go over the last one last time, right? So the fee simple determinable, right? This is the one that has the words of duration in it. So this land goes to you so long as it's used as a farm, until it is converted to commercial purposes, right? Something during the time that you use it as a person, right? All of those kind of, those magical words that are durational words. The fee simple subject to, condition subsequent, and even the acronym is not an easy one, right? It's the same idea that you're putting a limitation on the transfer of land. You're kind of trying to control what the person does with land, but instead of it automatically reverting back to you afterwards, you have within it this idea that you are going to actually physically re-enter and retake that land. Right? You have to take a subsequent action. When they start using it for commercial purposes, the grantor now has the obligation to re-enter. So sometimes you see this called the right of re-entry, sometimes called the power of termination. The grantor has the power. I like the power of termination phrase because it's like, you think of it as like the grantor has the power to terminate that person's land ownership.
This is the one we didn't talk about, and in many ways it's the most straightforward. Fee simple subject to an executory limitation.
This is where it's not going to grow to the grantor afterwards, but it's going to go to a third party.
The nice thing about this one is we no longer have to sit there and give ourselves a little bit of a headache over, are these like durational words or are these conditional words? If you see that it's so long as it's not used for commercial purposes, and then it goes to C, that transfer to a third party, not transferring back to O, not going back to the original owner, means that we're a fee simple subject to an executory limitation. And it doesn't matter whether the restriction looks more like the determinable or the condition subsequent. And we'll go through examples of these, but does that idea make sense? Right?
And we'll see that with each of those fees, so all of these are the possessory estate. So as you're looking at kind of these conveyances, you can identify what is the possessory estate. What does somebody hold today? The person who is holding the land today, how do we characterize what their property interest is? And for all of them, other than the fee simple absolute, there's somebody else with another property interest. Right? The fee simple absolute tells us nobody else has another property interest. They hold everything. For everything else, there's somebody else lingering out there who has some type of future interest in that property, and we need to try and figure out what their future interest is. And for the most part, they correlate. Right? Many of them, if you have identified it as a fee simple determinable, what is the future interest?
Possibility
reverter. Possibility reverter. I was like, come on. That's the stupidest acronym ever, right? Possibility reverter always goes together. So once you've identified fee simple determinable, you've already answered your second question. What about the fee simple subject to condition subsequent? Right of reentry or power of termination, right? Once you identify what the present state is, then you know what the next one is. They'll get a little bit more complicated, but some of these can kind of give us the answer right in it. All right, and then the fee simple subject to executory limitation. Anyone know what follows that one?
It's like within the order.
That one's an executory interest, and we'll cover those. What's left out of here is somebody is probably noticing I've not said the word remainder yet. We'll cover those. Remainders are actually things that follow life estates or term estates. So you can almost kind of draw a chart for you. Like, if I've identified the possessory interest as these things, you can kind of identify what the next answer is. Okay. All right, so this is just the fee simple subject to an executory limitation because I just accidentally flipped by this slide last time. All right, from O to A and her heirs, so from the owner of the property to A and her heirs, so long as Blackacre is used for agriculture, and if it is not so used, to B and her heirs. All right. If we were to just stop the sentence at the comma, if it was just from O to A and her heirs, so long as Blackacre is used for agriculture, what would that look like?
FSCF.
FS what?
An FSCF. Be simple.
No. No, Peter.
Be simple.
Right, and why? What is it telling you that?
The so long as.
The so long as. Those are durational words, not conditional words. This is why I say you just want to put a little sheet in front of you, because sometimes that seems like a tricky thing. Right? So if the sentence ended there, it would be a fee simple determinable. And what would be the future interest involved then? Higher? Possibility of reverter. We see what it is that it's a possibility that if it's ever used for agriculture, it's going to go back to O. So when we end our sentence and we're not clear where something's going, it goes back to O. We'll see some more of that. But because the sentence goes on and it tells us that it's going to actually go to B afterwards, not to O, it's going to a third party. Anytime we see a new letter, a new name pop up in there, that's a signal to us that we might be looking at a fee simple executory limitation. And then the accompanying interest is an executory interest. And there's two different types, but we'll hold off on that right now. All I want us to kind of feel good about is not the future interest part, but I want us to feel solid in our present possessory interests. The fee simple executory limitation. Fee simple subject to an executory limitation, right? That's what A has. And B has an executory interest. O ends up with nothing. O has kind of given away the future interest that O would have had. O no longer has that possibility of reverter. All right, let's go through the problems. Is there anybody who wasn't here last time who's here today? No. Okay, so everybody has one of these convey the lands things. I repeat the problems up here so we can see it. But let's just go through these really quickly. There's just 10 of them, and make sure that we feel like we're all on the same page. O wants to give his land to his only child, but O wants the land to stay in the family forever. How should he proceed? What should he do here? Mary, what should we do here?
Should we make detail
and what would that look like?
That would like to can we call the child A?
Call the child A. Sure.
To A and the heirs of his body.
To A and the heirs of his body. That would be a fee tale. Any problems with that?
course,
not just courts. It's even the government. So most jurisdictions do not like that. We only have 4 states in the United States that still allow us to convey a fee tail. So what else might we do? So what else would you do if your client comes to you? We're in New York. We're not in a state that acknowledges the fee tail, and they say they want the land to remain in the family forever and ever. What advice might you give them?
You could do a fee simple determinable.
So that would revert back to us.
What would your fee simple determinable say? How would you phrase it if you were going to write it?
So it leads to a his land and his heirs his land unless like no longer something like that. You have to make it conditional.
Why are you going to make it conditional or are you making it original?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, right, so you would say, oh, to A and his heirs, so long as
it stays
in the family. Yeah, maybe. It might be a little bit hard to phrase. That is actually one of the ones that would run us into the rule against perpetuities, which we won't do the calculation. But remember I said the reason we don't like the fee tail is that we don't actually like somebody today making the decision for generations and generations and generations. We're okay with them going a couple generations, but not forever. So actually, it's probably impossible to do it in New York, to say that you're going to keep this in your family forever. You could do things like putting very aspirational language in there. You could put a couple generations in there. You could say to A and then to A's kids, but you just can't keep going forever and ever. That's why we got rid of the fee tails. We didn't like it. Not that this is a trust class, but this is a trust as a mechanism that sometimes people use to do that type of thing, is they set up an external trust. But in just a land conveyance, we don't let a land conveyance be something that lasts for in that way. Right, so fee tail, or you just can't do it. Okay, O wants to sell her property for the highest possible price. How should she proceed? Haley, what do you think about this one?
A fee simple absolutely.
And why do you say that?
Because it's just the plain language, like to her heirs, like you just don't.
Why is that going to get you the best price?
Because that's the court's always. That's just what it is.
That's just what it is.
Yeah, that's the best one.
It is
the highest price and use of the land and whatever. All that.
Yes. All right. I mean, we can just think of this very logically. If I'm trying to sell my house, I'm going to get a much better price for it if I sell it in fee simple absolute. If I try and sell you a restriction on my land, if I sell you my land, I'd say, you can buy my land as long as you never have parties in it, right? I'm not going to sell it for as much money. You can buy my land for the duration of your life. I'm not going to sell that for that much money. The best kind of highest value of land is where you give the person who's purchasing the land the most freedom with the land. So that's going to be a fee simple absolute. Okay. O wants to give his land to A, but he wants the land back if it's used for commercial purposes. Can he do this? Is that a permissible restraint on alienation? What do you think, Greg?
Possibly.
There's no problem with it, right? You can do this, right? The only things that we really saw you were like impermissible restraints on alienation were the ones that were complete restraints. We're saying you could not do anything with your land, you could not sell your land. These ones that are actually limited in scope are fine. Okay, how would he do so?
Should it be simple to
Okay, and how would you write that if you were O's attorney?
From O to A and his heirs, so long as the land is not used for commercial purposes.
All right, is there anything else you could have chosen other than fee simple determinable? Andy has another one he wants to use. What?
I would use subject to condition subsequent.
Why would you choose that one instead?
Because that way he wants it back if it's used for something other than, or if it's used for a commercial purpose.
But that's the same as the fee simple determinable.
Well, not really. So if a fee simple determinable.
Oh, really? Yes. Tell me more.
If he wants it back, he wants the right of re-entry. So if he is the feasible determinant, he just has an interest in the future interest, an interest of reversion with the subject of condition subsequent, he has a right of reentry back if it's used for something else.
Gosh, I'm not sure I can argue with your words, but your sentiment seems a little bit off here. The fee simple determinable, either way, the guy gets the land back. The fee simple determinable, he actually gets that land back immediately. He doesn't have to bother exercising that right of reentry. So right of reentry or power of termination may sound like a powerful future interest to hold, but the possibility of reversion is actually even more powerful in some circumstances. Right? So if it's a fee simple determinable, the second that land is not used for, the second the land is used for commercial purposes, it automatically becomes owes. He doesn't even have to exercise a right of reentry or power of termination. So choosing the fee simple determinable might be what your client wants. They might want it back automatically. Necessarily. It might be that instead they want a fee simple condition subsequent, and that way they look and see kind of, do I want to take it back? And then they have the right to go take it back. But it doesn't happen automatically. Both of them get the land back. Both of them return the land to O.
So,
fee simple subject to condition subsequent, Adam?
Yes. I guess the key word there is that's the main way I'm going to
discuss this. I'm sorry, the is, because it says if in here?
Yes.
Okay, but this is the, sure, but this isn't the conveyance. This is just what your client says to you. O says to you, hey, I want the land, I want to give my land to A, but I want it back if he uses it for commercial purposes.
I feel like there'd be a simpler way to phrase this if you want to have to see whether the balance is.
Yes, but I just want to convey to you that think of this as just as like somebody who's not an attorney comes up to you and you're their attorney. And they say to you, I want to give my land to somebody, but I don't want them to ever use it for commercial purposes. That's all they've said to you. I wouldn't be too hung up on whether they chose unless provided that until, because they are not an attorney and are not going to have this list of magic words at their fingertips. So as their attorney, you're going to have to talk to them and figure out whether or not you think for their situation the fee simple determinable makes more sense or the fee simple condition subsequent. And it's going to rest on whether or not they want kind of this power of termination. The power of termination, pluses and minuses to it. In some cases, you might want to hold off on deciding whether you're really going to take the land back with its commercial purposes. Let's say what you were really trying to prevent was the development of a Walmart, but the commercial activity they engage in is a llama farm, and you're like actually fine with that. Maybe you don't actually want to exercise your right of reentry, your power of termination. Maybe you want them to go ahead and keep doing it. Or maybe you're worried, because you travel a lot, and maybe you're worried that you're not going to actually notice really quickly that they started that llama farm. The power of termination gives you perhaps a little bit more time before you kind of have to show up. If you're worried about adverse possession, right? Because the moment they start that llama farm, the land is yours, and their continued occupation of the land starts the clock ticking for adverse possession. The power of termination idea suggests that maybe we don't have the same type of clock ticking because they are not actually illegally there until you start exercising that power of termination. Does that make sense? Now, one of the cases we read last time, though, that one, remember the one that's like 100 years later, and they're using the land as a park and not using it as a water course. There is something in there, even if it's a power of termination and we give you kind of this longer time, it's not going to be forever. But so these are reasons why a power of termination actually might be preferable to some people. Other people are like, I'm living next door. I'm going to notice it happening. I want it to be mine right away. I want to be able to just file a quiet title, kick them out. All right. This is just how the conveyance would look, right? I think that's almost exactly what Greg said. And then the fee simple condition subsequent, if we were to write it, Andy, what would it look like?
Ode conveys to A's. I mean, I can say on the condition that it not be used for commercial purposes.
Right. That's all we have to do is take it. All we have to do is, like, really cross out so long as and put in provided that or on the condition that. Oh, I use provided that. Now, notice that we make it a little clearer, and it's nicer if it has this kind of thing that I put in the parentheses at the end. And if so, O has the right to re-enter and retake the land. But it's not necessary. It actually meets the requirements of the fee simple condition subsequent just by having that provided that language in it. All right.
So the power of re-entry, power of termination, is it negative to that, say, something like there's a debt attached to that piece of land or something? You don't want that debt to occur to you, or does the debt travel with the person and not the land? Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but it's a really complicated question. It really depends on the type of debt that it is and what and the approach of the state that you're in. We don't cover mortgages in this class, which talks about debt associated with the land. It's in Chapter 8 of your book. We just don't have time to cover everything, and so that's one of the chapters I've left out. But if you're really curious about debt associated with the land, it's covered in there. Andy?
So is there a preference as a landowner, as a person who's conveying land, when you have the choice between these two here? Because when I read it, both these options, it seemed like I want, as a person conveying land, I want the right of re-entry.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what I was just kind of discussing, right? Is you just have to think about your client and what their wishes are, and there's some situations where you can see they probably want the right of re-entry. They want don't be afraid of fooled by the sound of words, though. I mean, right of re-entry, power of termination, sounds cooler than possibility of reverter. But it's not necessarily stronger, it's just different. So you have to talk to your client and figure out what type of thing makes more sense for them. Something where they get the land back right away, or something where they have to do another step of taking the land back.
All right, O wants to give her land to her husband until he dies. Can she do so? Lauren?
Yes. A life estate.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be to be her, to be her life.
Yeah, or whatever letter we want to give the husband. All right, now notice we'll talk about this in a few minutes, but O actually retains a future interest there called a reversion, right? It'll go back to O after he dies, her husband dies, his husband dies. All right. O wants her land to go to her church as long. Wait, I typed this right. Land to go to her church as long as it's used for church purposes. But if the land ceases to be used for church purposes, O wants to be able to take back the property. Can she do so, Teresa?
Yes, with a fee simple conditional subsequent.
Fee simple subject to condition subsequent. How might you write that if you were her attorney?
O uses the land for church purposes, but then it goes to,
No, I know, it's tricky. I mean, think about, like, what would be the text of the conveyance, right? So this is, like, from O to B, or from O to the church. And it's not to, you can use some of the language there, but you just want to make sure you're using the right terms.
So uses land for church purposes, and then with the condition that it's O can use the land. I don't know. I really don't know.
That's right. O is going to convey to the church. So O to the church. What I want to caution us against is we can't use that phrase as long as it is used for church purposes if we want it to be a fee simple condition subsequent, right? That is one of our fee simple determinable phrases.
Provided that it's used for church purposes.
On the condition that it's used for church purposes. But if it is not used for church purposes, right? But then otherwise it can look just like the rest of the stuff.
What is that area that a purpose in church can use, like a church purpose is for the economy?
Well, this gets us into the case that we read that was the Maribel's case about the school. At what point was it not school purposes? That is absolutely something you can argue. It doesn't really affect our discussion here for just trying to name, just trying to figure out the right conveyances. If you are O's attorney and you want to really be specific, you would probably tell her church purposes is not specific enough. what do you really want them to use it for? Let's actually write a conveyance that says, I want this to be used for church gatherings. I want this to be used for, you know, kind of fundraising or not, right? So anytime you see a word like that as an attorney, you should be like, sit down with your client and be like, let's think of something less vague.
But we can see how, just in terms of figuring out what the possessory interest is, the possessory property right, fee simple, subject to condition subsequent, sounds like what they want here. All right. O wants her friend A to have a fee simple absolute. How should she write that? James?
Would it just be from O to A to theirs?
Yeah. How else might you write it?
Owed it.
Yeah, you got the easiest one. Sorry, don't overthink it.
Right? Yeah, that's what I always do.
Right? We could write it from O. So under the common law, it had to be from O to A and her heirs. Under the modern rule, we can leave off that and her heirs, and it just becomes from O to A. We also see people write things like from O to A forever and ever, from O to A in all eternity. All of those are, you know, fee simple absolutes. Okay, O wants A to have a fee simple, almost, just doesn't want the land to ever be used for commercial purposes. Jamie, what do you think of this one?
I feel like it might not be allowed.
Oh, yeah? Why not?
I think it's, like, against public policy.
Oh, yeah, okay. What's the public policy here?
Well,
we just like commerce?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Do you want the land to be used? I don't know. Maybe it's the same as the last one we did,
OA,
so long as it's not used for commercial purposes.
It's very similar to number 3, right? This is not an invalid restraint on alienation. I agree with you that public policy suggests that we want land to actually be used for commercial purposes. We want land to be put into its highest and best use, and we usually think of that as being kind of exploitation of the land, making money off the land. However, it has been deemed to be an acceptable restraint on alienation to tell people that they can't use their land for commercial purposes because you've left them so many other things they can do with their land. They can use it for residential purposes, recreational purposes, even public purposes of some other type. So, acceptable restraint on alienation. We're going to let them do it. So, how might they do it?
Okay, so long as it's not used for purposes.
And what would that be?
A fee simple determinable.
Exactly. Right, so it's just like number 3. We could use either the fee simple determinable or the fee simple condition subsequent. Jamie gave us example of the fee simple determinable. Okay. O wants her son to have the land until he dies, and then she wants the land to come back to her. How should she write that? Where are we, Martha?
We do S for son.
We can do S. You guys get to choose. Yeah.
O to S for life, but if he dies, the
yeah, I mean, I like the way you suggest he might live forever. Alright, so say that again. O to S for life.
But if he dies. The right to re-enter goes back to O.
Just in case he's not a vampire. Okay. Sure.
Or that when he dies.
All of that works, but let me also suggest to you, you could have made it a little bit briefer.
Okay.
Right? This is just to show that what she's really describing is a life estate, in a very standard life estate, and the default for life estate is it goes back to O afterwards. So you could kind of write this longer phrase as Martha's suggesting about where it's going to go and when, but you can actually convey that exact same meaning by just saying O to S for life. Yeah, makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, this is a little bit different. O wants her son to have the land until he dies, and then she wants the land to go to her daughter. We're jumping over Andy, we're going to Will.
Oh.
You answered earlier.
O to S, like, O conveys to S for life, then to D and her heirs.
I think that looks good. O to S for life, then to D. You could put and her heirs, right, but we know it's not necessary. Now, So this is different, right? So now, because we want it to go to somebody else, we have to specify at the end. The default is that it's going to go back to O. So that's why we have to add it. And we'll get to kind of naming what they have, but just as a little teaser, S gets a life estate and D gets an indefeasibly vested remainder. And you were excited about that. Okay, all right, last one. O wants her son to have the son until he dies, and then she wants the land to go to her daughter unless her daughter gets married before then. What would you do here?
O to son for life, then daughter, provided that daughter is not married before them.
Right. Right, so O to S for life, then to D, unless D is married before S's death. So what's interesting is you did provided that, and I did unless that. They're both kind of terms that sound, right, they both work. But notice how we would put one of those as being kind of like a fee simple determinable type language and one of those being a fee simple condition subsequent type language. It doesn't matter quite as much once we get into the idea of the remainders. But we'll talk about what type of this is. Just so, again, just the precursor here. S gets a life estate and D gets a vested remainder subject to complete divestment. Right, so you might lose it if she never gets married, or if she gets married, I guess. All right. Any questions about the present possessory part of this before we go on to the future interest? Yes, Martha.
All right. So, like in number 6, when we said you could say O to A forever and ever.
Yeah.
When we use language like that, that doesn't make it a fee-tail. Saying forever and ever.
It doesn't make it a fee-tail. The fee-tail really has to be heirs of her body.
Okay.
Heirs of his body. That is one that is just like, or you could say in fee tail. But that is one that we mostly want to fulfill the desires of the grantor. We really want to do what O wanted. But if O's not around anymore, we have to interpret the language. Where our default presumption now is what? Fee simple absolute. If we're not sure, if it's a little hazy, we like fee simple absolute. It didn't used to be that. It used to be the life estate. So this is why when you see things like forever and ever, like in all eternity, especially when these are like handwritten wills, right? We're not going to need people to say the magic phrase of and her heirs. At common law, you needed to. At common law, if you said forever and ever, and you didn't have that magic phrase in there, and her heirs, it was going to be a life estate. And we feel like that's no longer necessary. Partially because land just doesn't work the way it used to. It's not a feudal system where everything is kind of going back to the king. We're not worried also about land kind of being divided up in little pieces in the way we used to be. Okay, let's look at these future interests. So the future interest section in your book has no cases in it, right? It's just kind of describing in a very unclear way these future interests. So I'm going to try and break them down a little bit for you. I really do think, much like doing those other problems, I think learning future interests is best kind of done doing examples.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Doing like a future interest, is that
transfer
mortgage?
You just a little quiet. Is it what?
Transfer mortgage.
Is it transfer mortgage?
This is actually like a little bit like higher stroke. It depends. It just depends on the state law. Sometimes mortgages rise as other property. Sometimes it can transfer like usually yes, a mortgage is a lien, a debt that you have associated with your property or granting your property, but not always. So we're just going to ask you to put that thought aside as being a little bit beyond what we're doing right now. But I'd be happy to talk to you guys about it more later. Yes, now future interest?
Okay, so future interest, I think we want to really think of it as being divided up into kind of two main categories. The first one is when it goes back to O, and as we already have realized, that O is just this shorthand for the grantor, the person who gave the property, the person who is the landowner who's going to decide where it's going. We have a bunch of different ways that that person can give out their land. And if they're giving anything less than what they have, then there's a possibility that then there's going to be a kind of a reversion, a back to O kind of lingering in there. Right? So we see several places where it's going to go back to O. So if you're O and you can be a fee simple absolute, you've conveyed absolutely everything. There's nothing that comes back to you. But if you are O and if you've conveyed a life estate,
a fee tail, any of our defeasible fees, it's got to go somewhere afterwards. It has to have a future interest in it. If you hold on to the future interest, that's a type of reversion. If instead you put that future interest in somebody else, it's a type of remainder or executory interest. But let's start with the reversions because they're actually, I think, relatively straightforward. So here's some examples of what we think of as a classic of a reversion. O to A's, A and the heirs of her body. All right, what does that look like? What is that, how do we label that possessory interest? What does that one look like? Someone said it. Fee tail, right? It looks like a fee tail. Now, here's the thing about a fee tail. It feels like they last forever and ever, but they might not. Why not? Well?
Those heirs could die out.
Right, your bloodline could die out. And because that's a possibility lingering out there, and we would need a place for that property to go if that ever happened, we say that O holds on to a reversion. And we talked about this a little bit last time, right? That doesn't necessarily mean O, the exact person who conveyed the land. Right? If I'm O and I convey the land to somebody in fee tail and their bloodline dies out 100 years from now, I am not likely to still be alive unless I'm breaking some records, right? So that means where is it going to go? To my heirs. Right, we have to figure out where that. What if I don't have any heirs? Anybody know where it goes then?
State.
The state. Anyone know what that fancy word is?
State.
No. Oh gosh, wow. No. These are just, wow, you guys just crazy. Yeah, I like it. I like it. They're crazy, they're wrong. But you're brainstorming. Escheat. It escheats to the state. I don't know where that word comes from. I'm sure we could study Latin some more and figure it out. But so if there's actually nobody, if we run out of anybody, the state gets your property. But so here we say that A has a fee tail and O retains a reversion. Now I put up there reversion and fee simple absolute to note that every time we have a future interest, the fullest description of that future interest is to also add on to the end of it an explanation of what type of property interest that person will have when they get it. Does that make sense? You actually mostly just see people say they have a reversion, but a fuller answer is to say they have a reversion fee simple absolute, because if and when O gets that property, O will have it in fee simple absolute. Sometimes people call this a possibility of reverter under the fee tail, because there's a possibility that it won't revert, right? There's a, you know, the bloodline could go on forever and ever. All right, O to A for life, then to B for 20 years. What does A have? A life estate. Now, it's not going right back to O automatically. So does O retain any property interest here, or does it just go to B? Amanda. Yeah, we always have to have an ending of our sentence, right? So we know here that after A dies, it's going to go to B, and B's going to get it for 20 years. Well, what happens when that 20 years is up? If this is silent on that, anytime it's silent, anytime we don't know what happens at the end, it always goes back to O. That's our default, right? We'll get to the. I put these in here now in case you're curious, but we'll define them in a little bit. This is a type of remainder called an indefeasibly vested remainder in term estate. That's a lovely phrase. But right now, O has a reversion because the conveyance doesn't name anyone else at the end of it. Notice how we change it if this is what the conveyance is. If it's O to A for life, then B and her heirs. A gets a life estate, and what does B get? Not just a term estate, it's a type of remainder, but it's the first remainder was a remainder in term estate, like a remainder for 20 years. This is a remainder in fee simple. It ends the sentence. So what do we have? What's O left with? Nothing. Nothing. All right? So O has nothing left. So we can see how if your sentence doesn't end, that's when we always have to think about O lingering around at the back.
Okay. O to A for life, then to B and her heirs if, during A's life, B should climb Mount Everest and return to tell the tale. What does A have? A life estate. Okay, that one's always, like, very straightforward. Does O retain any interest here? Is there any possibility? That's what we always have to think. You always have to read the sentence thing. Is there any way this might end up going back to O?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the circumstance where it goes back to O?
B doesn't.
B does not climb Mount Everest and return to tell the tale. Right? So we always have to say, so whatever, B has this interest, and we'll say, we'll learn that label better later. But we always then label O as still having this reversion. And it would be a reversion in P simple absolute because if O ended up getting it back, that's how they would have it. So always think about that. Always read your sentence and make sure you kind of thought of all, there's no kind of lingering possibility that it might go back to O. Think about those. All right, feel good about reversions? All right. O to A for life. Why do I have this one there? Yes. Oh, I know why I have this one here. Okay, oh, A has a life estate and it has a reversion. Okay, here's where we can make it a little complicated. That is one of the most straightforward conveyances we see, right? O to A for life. Life estate, it goes back to O automatically. Here's where sometimes things get weird. What if A then conveys her life estate? Wait, what if A conveys a life estate to B? Well,
doesn't it end when A's life actually ends?
Exactly, right. So what do you remember what we call that life estate? No. Anyone remember? It's a Latin phrase. Oh, actually, it's probably, if I click the next thing, it's probably on the slide. It's a life estate per otra vi, a life estate where somebody else's life is the measuring estate. And what does A have then? Does A have anything? Has she given away everything she has? Rosalie? A possibility of what? She has a possibility. How? Why do you say that? Yeah, exactly, right? So we have this weird situation where the person with the life estate actually has a reversionary interest. There's a possibility that B will die before A. Right? So if A, we are kind of like, we were prepared for that idea of like, oh, if A dies first, B gets kicked out. But if B dies first, that property is going to go back to A. So A has then a reversion sitting out there. And it's not a possibility. That's the only thing I would correct you on, Rosalie. We wouldn't say it's a possibility of reversion. I don't know, even though it is. I guess we always feel like it's a certainty that people will die one day. We usually call it a reversion. But the concept is right. There's a possibility that it will come back to her because B might die before her. Now, if she gets it back, right, if she has that reversion, so her future interest here, if we were to label it, when she gets it back, she still just has a life estate. So she has a reversion in life estate, not a reversion in fee simple absolute. Yeah, not too painful yet. Still has that reversion that O always had. Nothing that A and B do in there can change O's property rights. They might kind of do some weird negotiations around what A has, but O's reversion stands strong. What if A conveys her conveys to B and her heirs? Amanda? She can only convey what she has. So no matter how kind of grandiose she writes the conveyance, it's always going to be limited by her lifespan. I mean, she could write something that was like a fee simple determinant. She could write to B so long as, but no matter what she conveys, it will always end when she dies and goes back to O. Okay. All right, now let's talk a little bit about the possibility reverter. What present possessory interest is this partner with? Well, this is a future interest, right? We remember we say we always have partners, man. There's the future interest and the present possessory interest. Who's the present possessory interest here? Alex?
Fee simple determinable.
Fee simple determinable. I guess you don't like the stupid Frank Sinatra thing, but Frank Sinatra doesn't prefer Orville Redenbacher, right? They always go together. They're always partners in this crazy journey. Martha.
What was the partner for the reversion of the partner in life state and detail?
Right. So, yes. But just remember... Yes, as long as the O is as long as it's not going to somebody else afterwards, right? You know, we could write it that it like it, that after the life estate it goes to somebody. If remember our sentence that was A O to A for life and then to B and her heirs. There's no reversion in there because it's in the sentence. But otherwise, we look for reversions in combination with fee tails. But actually, any time you can read a sentence and there's something hanging out, there's a reversion of some type. A possibility of reverter is a type of reversion. These are all types of reversions. If you think of reverting as being go back to A, sometimes we have just a more specific name for that. Ian, please put your phone away. All right, these are created when the grantor conveys an estate, whether of the same duration as he owns, but only until a specified future event occurs. That makes sense when you think of it as being fee simple determinable, right? So long as it's not used for commercial purposes. O to A and her heirs, so long as A never becomes a lawyer. A has a fee simple determinable, and O has a possibility of reverter. It's not a certainty of reverter, right? It's just a possibility. All right, what happens when A becomes a lawyer? Then what type of property interest does O have? Right? We fulfill the possibility. So A has nothing and O has the fee simple absolute. Allie?
In that situation, only A can become the lawyer. Her heirs can become lawyers in order to gain interest in the property, right?
Oh, I like what you're trying to do, but I'm not gonna. But no, we won't let you do that. All right, so it's A. Maybe I'm understanding you right. Maybe I'm misunderstanding you right. It's A never becomes a lawyer.
Right.
Oh, so I have it wrong. So long as A never. So what happens when A becomes a lawyer? A has nothing, and O has to be simple absolute.
Right.
What we have to wait until A's death before we know for sure what her property right, whether or not it's something she actually gets to pass down. It's really an annoying property right then, because you think about your ability to sell that property and things like that. You'd have to be like, I promise I'm not going to become a lawyer. Because if you became a lawyer on your deathbed, you've suddenly changed that property right. Okay, but so if A never becomes a lawyer, then what do her heirs get? What fee simple absolute. But we don't hold her, we don't make any, there's no obligation on her heirs there. And her heirs is just kind of, remember, that's almost like our term of art, just telling us that we're giving it to her in fee simple absolute. It's just the problem is that we can't actually decide, we can't declare her to have fee simple absolute until she's dead. I don't know. Maybe she could get a law passed against her that says she can't be a lawyer or something. Maybe she can do something. I wonder if she could do something that totally, like, disqualified her for the bar in every state or something like that. But we see how how that works. Okay. The event that you have to wait for the event that triggers the reversion never to occur. Not all of them are ones that are in their deathbed. Sometimes they're ones that could be. What if it was to A until if she becomes a lawyer? Then you would actually get fee simple absolute quite much earlier, right? Like, you could show kind of a certainty of that earlier. All right, O to A for life so long as she does not become a lawyer. So note, that's same example I just did, right? Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is different because it's a life estate. I just wanted to point out that we could also have these determinable life estates. Are you wincing at that, Jesse?
No.
You just got to chill. It was like, oh, okay, right? A determinable life estate. So it's like a fee simple determinable. It's a life estate that could end earlier, that could be cut short. It's a defeasible life estate. That makes sense? Nobody's freaking out about that? Good. Okay. And then O has, this is interesting because O has both the possibility of a reverter and a reversion. Why do I say that? Amanda?
Because it's reversion.
Right, so that's why it's a reversion. That's why she has a reversion. Right, because there's a life estate, and we say that there's a reversion hanging around after the life estate. She also has the possibility of reverter, because we have this determinable thing out there, a life estate determinable, but it means that there's a possibility. So really, we know it goes to O. We're just not sure she's going to get it when A dies or when A becomes a lawyer. She might get it a little earlier, but she'll at least get it when A dies. All right. Power of termination, right of reentry. These are created when the grantor conveys an estate of the same or lesser duration as he owns, and then stipulates the estate. That is just like the fancy kind of legalistic way of telling us that this is a fee simple condition subsequent, which we already feel comfortable with, right? It's that whole thing of like, I am going to come back in and take it. But let's look at we're just looking at this to think a little bit more about the future interest associated, where we already spent some time with the present possessory interest. So here's an example. They should sound kind of familiar, right? To own her heirs, but if, right? That's our magic language in this case. But if A should ever become a lawyer, O has the power to terminate A's estate by exercising his right to re-enter and retake possession of the premises. We like this fee simple one, fee simple condition subsequent, because they've used both but if and the power to terminate, kind of giving us a lot of confidence that this is a fee simple condition subsequent. All right. So we say that that's what we label A's interest as. That's a fee simple condition subsequent. So what do we say O's future interest is? Right, or it's at the top of the page. Right of reentry, the power of termination. Ignore that vested subject to complete divestment. That's just for total nerds in the class. I just want to kind of reinforce for us that these are property interests that the person holds today. These are property interests that you could transfer to somebody. These are things you could sell. These are things that you could leave in your will. In some cases, they're things that somebody might give you a loan based on. They're an actual kind of property interest. Now, this one might not be you might not get a lot of takers who are going to invest in this or pay you a lot of money for it. But the law allows you to do so. Okay, once A dies, the divesting condition can never occur. I don't know why I have that as H there. And O will get the fee simple absolute. The A will get the fee simple absolute. A's there. Right? Okay. Remainders. I'm going to go through these. Why don't we do this? We'll go through them, just the ideas of them, and then we'll do the exercises. Is that... feel like the right idea? We'll go through them somewhat quickly, and then I think the best way for us to do it is to do the worksheet, so you can and I can come around and kind of go over them with people. It is hard for them to just sink in by hearing a lecture on them. All right, but let's talk about this. Future interest when they are not going back to the grantor, when they're going to somebody else, not going back to O, fall into two categories. One is remainder, and the other is executory interest. It is actually relatively easy to identify these two big categories. It is sometimes more difficult to figure out what subcategory they fit into within those two big categories. The remainder, the thing that a lot of kind of textbooks, property scholars, you know, our review classes always describe the remainder as being somebody who is patient. The remainder man is actually the phrase which... I don't know, sounds like a Dr. Who villain to me, the remainder man. The remainder man sits around patiently and waits for the natural expiration of an estate. That means the remainder always follows a life estate or a term estate. That one little hint right there can help you with so many of your conveyances. If they start with from O to A for life, comma, and then to somebody, realize, oh, that means we're in the remainder realm. Somebody waited around for someone to die, right? So the remainder man patiently waits for you to die. For the most part, maybe he's patiently waiting for that 10 years to expire, but usually he's patiently waiting for someone to die. The executory interests are cutting short a previous interest. This is why these are the ones that are associated with the phrases that look like the fee simple determinable and the fee simple condition subsequent. These are the ones where, like, if you don't become a lawyer, B's gonna get it. B's sitting around there waiting to see what happens. Sometimes B is, like, allowed to physically come in and have, like, a power of termination.
And sometimes B just gets automatically if you don't fulfill the example. We don't actually change the label of the executory interest. We say all of that's executory interest. So if it's going not to O, so if it looks like a fee simple determinable or fee simple condition subsequent, but it's not going to O, it's going to B, C, it's going to somebody else at the end of that chain, that is then an executory interest. Those seem straightforward, yes? Right, they get a little bit more complicated. I know you're not shocked to learn that. Because they then break into subcategories. These, again, I think you can easily kind of make yourself a little sheet, a little diagram. I usually actually do it as a series of questions. I don't do, like, the flowchart thing, but figure out what's helpful for you. The types of remainders are called either vested or contingent. And I think that these words kind of make sense, right? The vested remainders are the ones that you know who is going to get them. The contingent remainders are either you don't know who's going to get them or you're not sure if they're going to get them because they have to do something else first. So a vested remainder, we know who it's going to be, and there's no condition precedent to them getting. There's nothing that they know, nothing they have to do, nothing they have to perform. They're just waiting around for someone to die. Okay, so they are created in an ascertainable person. You know who's going to get it. Compare this to something that would leave something to, you know, to someone's kids, right? I'm going to leave this to Lauren's kids. We don't know if Lauren, you got any kids?
No.
We don't know. That's another class. But we have no idea. So we don't know. We don't know who her kids are going to be, or if there's going to be any kids, right? We don't have an ascertainable person. It's different than if we leave it to Lauren, right? We can point at her, right? We know who she is. Other examples are like, I'm going to leave it to the person who graduates top of my class. I now know who that was. That was a long time ago. But like, we wouldn't know if it's a category that we can't figure out who it is yet. The first person in my class who wins a Nobel Prize, that has not happened yet. So, okay, if I leave it to them, I don't know who that's going to be. It's an unascertainable person. But it's a totally permissible way to leave your property to somebody. And there's no conditioned precedent. There's nothing they have to do before they get it. So think of this as the things like, I leave this to Lauren as long as she graduates first in her class. Right, so there's something she has to do. We know who it is. It's an ascertainable person. But there's now something she has to do. There's a condition precedent that we don't know if she's going to fulfill. I have faith in her. But we don't know for sure if she's going to fulfill that. Right? That's a condition precedent to her getting. So that's not vested. To be vested, I have to be able to point to it, that person, and say that they don't have anything they need to do before they're going to be able to get it. Now here, and if that's true, if we can point to that person, and we know who they are, and there's no rules we put on before they're going to get it, we say that it is indefeasibly vested. That's a really strong remainder. That's a remainder you can go to the bank on, literally. Right? To A for life, and then to B. That is an indefeasibly vested remainder. All B has to do is wait around for A to die, and we know that A will one day die. Now, some of them might be ones that you might lose. Some of them might be ones that today we can point at the person and there's no condition subsequent, but there might be a condition, there's no condition precedent, but there might be a condition subsequent. Meaning that there's nothing they have to do before they get it, but there might be a way that they could lose it afterwards. I'll show you some examples. Vested subject to open is more like the idea that there's a category that is not yet a closed category. So if somebody left something to my children, I have two children, I am not having more kids, but there's a possibility that I could have more kids. And so therefore, if somebody just left it to my children, to Jessica Lee's children, that's vested subject to open because it is vested. We can point to my children. We're not making them do anything before they get it. But there's a possibility they're going to have to share it.
if they have more siblings, right? So it's a very, they're very specific kind of situations. These, the vested subject to open, we don't see very often.
Okay. Contingent. Contingent is really taking these first two things and one of them is occurring. So either we don't know, the person is not currently ascertainable, we cannot identify that person yet.
We don't know who Laura's kids are going to be. We don't know who's going to graduate at the top of the class. Unascertainable.
Or there's a condition precedent. One or the other. Or you could have both, but you don't need both. Just one or the other. And you can always think about it this way. Vested means you know who's going to get it and when they're going to get it. Contingent means I'm not sure who's going to get it, or I know who's going to get it, but I'm not sure when they're going to get it. Right? There's an uncertainty. So the phrase contingent, it's helpful. You know, helps you understand. You're not sure. let me see. Furiously writing. I will hold off on my clicker for a moment. All right. So if we think about... we think about these... I wonder if I have the... I'll put these slides back up if you guys need them a little bit later. Okay, let me just show you again. These indefeasibly vested sometimes help with examples. So the indefeasibly vested, the identifiable person is certain to get a vested estate. You know who's going to get it and when. Right? That's what we already said. The vested subject to divestment, identifiable person is going to get a vested estate. There's no condition precedent, but there's a condition subsequent means that they could lose it. So let me see, what's an example here? You know, this is always like a but-if type question. Like, O to A for life, and then to B. But if B ever, like, decides to move to Africa, then she loses it, right? So it's not something that she's going to do beforehand. It's something that if it happens afterwards, she could lose it. Vested subject to open is kind of, it only works if you're giving something to a class of people, to a group, right? An identifiable person is going to get the vested estate, but that person might need to share it. There might be more people in that group that you're giving it to. It's a gift to a class of people. If one member of the class exists, there's no condition subsequent. There's no condition precedent. Because we already have at least one identifiable person. If none of them exist yet, then it's a contingent matter because they're not yet ascertainable. Yeah? I'm going to do these a couple examples, just like two, real quick, and then just executory, and we'll do the examples, the worksheets together. O to my daughter A for life, then to my son B and his heirs. Right? So this phrase for A for life, that's our phrase that lets us think we should be in the land of remainders. Anytime we're starting a phrase and see that it begins with a life estate. So the present possessory interest is the life estate, and we're trying to identify the future interest. What does B have today? What do you think B has? Elise, what would you label this one?
Indefeasibly vested remainder,
exactly, right? We know who B is, and we know when he's going to get it, when A dies. All right, so those are the questions. This is like the checklist for yourself. Do we know who's going to get what when? Yes. So is there any condition precedent? Anything B has to do? No. That it must be a vested remainder. What type of vested remainder? Well, it's a known person. There's no condition precedent. Can't be taken away by a future event. Indefeasibly vested. This is how I like to approach it. Some people just have like a flow chart and stuff like that. I give myself little questions that I should ask as I read each thing. It's just figure out what approach works best for you. And you'll have these slides, right? So you can kind of look even at my little questions if that logic flow is helpful for you. All right. O to my daughter A for life, then to my son B and his heirs. But if my son should ever register as a Republican, to C and his heirs. C is a Democrat. Okay, right. So this now tells you, this shows you something a little bit different, right? We still have the, I guess I don't have the things underneath. All right, we still have the life estate, and we still know who's going to get afterwards. Is this a condition precedent? Is there anything that stops B from getting it? Right, so we have kind of this person that we can identify. Oh, excuse me. We have this person that we can identify right now. We know who's going to get what when. We say we know that B is going to get it when A dies. But is there a condition precedent to getting it? There's nothing that B has to do. There's nothing B has to do before he's going to get it. So we say that it's a vested remainder. But what kind of vested remainder? Is it created in a known person? Yes. Is there a condition precedent? No. But could it be taken away by a future event? Yes. Right? So now you see that it's a vested remainder subject to complete divestment. We know who's going to get it, and that person, B, doesn't have to do anything. But he could lose it. And so that's why we say he's got a vested remainder subject to complete divestment. Somebody could do it. Okay. O to A for life and A's children. This is just the example of the subject to open, right? That there could be more kids. You might have to share it. I'm going to skip that one and just go to executory interest. Okay, executory interests are then a similar idea, but now they're just now in a third person, right? We are, as we look at our phrase, we're no longer going to have sentences that begin with for life. Unless we have a really long chain or something like that. But, right, you have to be divesting another estate. You have to be kind of cutting short somebody else's, right? So it follows a fee simple. Oh, I have those letters wrong. Fee simple subject to an executory limitation, but it can occur in a couple other places, as we'll see in some of our examples. We label them, for God knows what reason, springing and shifting. I don't actually know why we care what that label is. I don't think there's actually any legal implications that differ with whether you have a springing executory interest versus a shifting. They are both kind of have the same restrictions on them. They're both, you know, alienable and divisible. And so I'm not sure why they feel compelled to teach you these terms. But I will teach them to you. So you can feel like you have gone through the same horrendous process that all other lawyers before you have gone through of having to memorize these words for reasons that I cannot defend. All right. Springing is if your interest is coming from O, and shifting is if it's coming from someone else. For the large part of what we're looking at, we are looking at things that are shifting from A. From O to A, so long as it's not used as a farm, but if it is to B, shifting. If it goes to A, and then if A ever uses it as a farm, it goes to B. We will see that there's a couple examples where it actually could be coming straight from O. And they are the unusual situations. Or you have something where it goes back to O and then goes to B afterwards. Often these are because the person, B is not old enough yet to hold property. They're weird things. Like, let's see if I have an example in here. Here's one, like O to A 15 years from now. O is actually created in you, is given you today a future interest. But it's this weird example of a future interest where O hasn't actually given up any possession right now. So we say that O has actually created in themselves like a term estate, and it's followed by an executory interest. We call this a springing executory interest, and it is really just something to write in your book and keep that as an exception. This is a weird example of something that happens sometimes where we have kind of this change in idea of what's happening. But we say that O has kind of in ways we can think of this as O has kind of turned themselves into another letter. Like, it's kind of like O's turn themselves into B by conveying a term estate to themselves, followed by a fee simple absolute in A. Sam?
So in future interests, you're able to take loans and sell them, things like that. Can you do that on springing interest?
Yes. It's just whether or not somebody's actually going to... All of these are future... All future interests in the United States, and this was not always true, are now alienable, divisible. You can leave them in your will. You can leave them. They can go by testate. You can sell them. Or you can try and take out a loan on them. It's just not all banks. Banks are going to find them equally worthy of an investment. This one is pretty darn good. You know you're going to get that property in 15 years. That is definitely something somebody could loan you, make you a loan on.
Okay.
right? Some of them we read, they're a little less certain that the person's actually going to get it. That's all you're going to see is the bank's going to kind of enter. There's nothing legally that prevents you from doing that, but it's just kind of perhaps the sensibility of an investor might not invest in your property if it seems very tenuous, your likelihood of getting it. Let's see. Generally what they look like, right? It's like kind of these, they usually have this long chain in them. For O to B for life, actually, what does that suggest to us? That the next one is a remainder. So C then gets, C is the remainder waiting around for B to die. But then we see that there's another interest following C. And this interest is D has a possibility of cutting short what C has. We have multiple future interests here, one of them being a remainder. What type of remainder would you label that? Do we know who's going to get it and when? Do we know who's going to get it and when? Yes, right? We know that C will get this property when B dies. We say that it's vested. But then we ask, is there a possibility that, is there anything that C has to do before he gets it? No, there's no requirements on C. Is there a possibility that C will lose it? Yes, because of D's actions. Right? So that means it's a vested remainder subject to complete divestment. I'll get you guys' question in a second. Let me just finish the sentence. But the and so then we have to label what D's interest is. Right? C is the one with this vested remainder. What do we call C's interest? Well, C is the one who has the possibility of cutting short. D has the possibility of cutting short D. C? D has the possibility of cutting short C. So we call D's interest an executory interest. Springing or shifting? Shifting, because it's not coming from O, it would be coming from C if it comes anywhere at all. Elena?
If D returns to New York, does that not cut B's life estate?
Yeah, cut B's life estate? I see what you're saying. I didn't mean to write it that way. I mean, you could definitely kind of, I guess, maybe try to take this to court. But usually you would say that this C to life, we're waiting for the... It sounds like this sounds like, to me, this is about C and D.
Okay.
And that D returning early wouldn't mess up B. Now, if B returned before... If D returns to New York before B dies, it might never go to C. But that doesn't... This is often confusing people, but it doesn't change the label that we give the thing today. If on today it's not returned, we still say that C has this vested remainder subject to complete divestment. Once he's returned, he's been divested. And he no longer has any rights. So he could lose it earlier in the process. We just want to figure out what to label them today. Circumstances might change our labels so that a week from now we have to change those labels. So we're looking just at what... Does that answer your question?
I'm not asking that system.
Same thing, all right? Okay. When E marries, so this is another one. This is another one that it looks a lot like the top one, right? That these are kind of ones that are these unusual creations where O is holding on to property but creating a future, this potential future interest in somebody. That just become these weird kind of springing executory interests. I think we should just work on... these are just more examples. I think we should just work on the sheets.
What you should do on here is for each person's name on here. So the first one is from Courtney to Peter and his heirs. I want you to say, ask yourself, what does Courtney have and what does Peter have? So for each name, think if you can figure out what each of the people, you could label each of the people have. Now I think some people took these and some didn't. So I'll just pass them around if you guys do have your stuff.
Alright guys, you cannot have a future interest unless you have a present interest. Right?
You need to, and each of those have to first probably identify the present interest so you can figure out the correct future interests. Does that make sense? Anybody have any questions about any of the problems they're working on? Everyone's figured them all out? Getting awesome?
Yeah.